Welcome to episode 193 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to a performance which in many ways had many positives, and there's much to be praising the current squad about. But also, what looked like was going to be a really commanding performance sort of degenerated into an edge-of-your-seat thriller, with Wexford fighting back to get the same scoreline as we had against them last time, a narrow 3-2 win in Dundalk's favour. Gentlemen, of the pros and the cons, which ones stick more in your mind?
Well, it was a really, really strange. It's a strange game, I think, to analyse. Do you remember in the last podcast we were reviewing a few games, and when we were talking about the 4-0 win, the comments from Twitter were strangely negative for a 4-0 win. And similarly, on a night where we won after a few losses, Cove dropped points, we score a lot of goals, you know, comparatively, but the you left the ground kind of going, you know, it's not the resounding result you would have liked. I mean, the pros for me is scoring goals, you know, always happy. But also, strangely, because we had two really, really great goals, the thing that stood out to me is Arubi's first goal, which was a messy, scrappy, in front of the goal thing, is exactly the type of goal we should be scoring. So we can talk about Ward and Arubi doing these lovely half volleys, which captured their attention. But thinking back on it, the first goal early on is exactly the type of thing that we've been doing wrong. Not putting away goal mouth scrambles. Ugly as it is, just get the ball into that. So the game, a dream start, you know, goal up within 2 minutes and you think, oh, we are now flying, banish the ghosts of the last few weeks, so let's keep going. Half an hour in, 2-0 up, Wexford aren't at the races at all. Lovely second goal by Ruby, and you think this is, you know, going into half time, 2-0 up, and you think it's lovely, it's sunny, Cove are going to drop points, it's all good. And in the second half, so the pros, I think, is simply Dundalk finding their shooting boots again in a range of different ways. The game of two halves, the second half then, it's because I don't think Wexford played particularly well. You know, as Martin always says, you get what you deserve. If the game had ran out to like a 3-0, you wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, the scoreline is the scoreline and it does tell some of the story. 2-0 up, second half, you are well in control and Dundalk FC shoot themselves in the foot. What a howler of a goal. We don't like to single out players and stuff like this, but it was a singular mistake, I think, by Minogue, the keeper, who's been mostly really good this season, had some really impressive performances. And then it goes 2-1, and even if Wexford aren't really putting up to us, it is just the psychological breach has happened, you know, the containment, you know, the mind virus is in now that, oh my God, from 2-0 up, we can throw this away. It goes 3-1, lovely, lovely, lovely goal, Keith Ward, roof lifts off the place, and you think, 3-1, we will see this out. And then minutes towards the end, we concede another sloppy-ish goal. And you're in a position then where 5 minutes goes up as, you know, the amount of added time. And we are all staring at our watches, staring at the floor, hoping to ride this one out. Should never have been in that position. So really, really pros and cons. I think some lovely goals. And I really think my highlight is a scrappy goal because that's really what Dundalk have been missing. And two really, really sloppy conceded goals. The only good thing I would say is that other than those shooting yourself in the foot and a very hairy chance, which we'll talk about probably at the very end, where we could have thrown away. If I'd gone 3-3, oh my God, like you don't want to know what, you know, what that might have done for the next few weeks. I would say that Killer probably screamed his lungs out at full time in the dressing room, despite the fact that we won and we went 6 points clear at the top of the table. So yeah, a really, really hard one. Mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to the stage of the season, I think, where like winning is the most important thing. And honestly, I will take the scrappy 3-2 wins with like imperfect defensive records and things like that if it means that we get over the line. And Cove having drop points at the same time, right, really meant it was a big night that went in our favour. I think we're looking at being 6 points clear with 12 games left to play. And if we were to win the next two games, right, over the doubleheader over the weekend, you know, we're really going to start ratcheting down the number of games that those other teams have got in order to, you know, sort of catch us. And so I think it was really important to get over the line, even if it wasn't, you know, the, what would you say, the most perfect performance. But I spoke to my family before the game. You know, I said that in the past, you know, a couple of weeks, it'd been like there was this force field over the goals where we couldn't score. And I said it was obviously becoming a psychological thing for the team. And so what I really wanted was to see us get an early goal and take that pressure off. And that's exactly what happened. And so really delighted for Arubi, right? And I think the rest of the strike force, like I think Owen Kenny, that really, you know, sort of made that goal happen. And so I think a weight off their shoulders, right, to hit the back of the net a couple of times, right? I think it will feel good right around the camp to have the monkey off the back for that kind of thing. So I think that's very positive. But the only thing is, again, you know, as Rory said, defensively, we coughed up goals, and it has to be said, under no real pressure, right? Wexford were not pinning us back in the box or anything like that, certainly when they got their first goal. And you know, probably not even any sustained pressure right under the second goal. And that's not the first time over the past couple of weeks, right? The Sligo game was a similar story, right? We were bossing that game, and under minimal pressure, you know, all of a sudden it was 2-0 to Sligo. And you get the feeling that at the moment, that, you know, central defensive partnership at the moment, even though it's, you know, I think we've been delighted to see O'Keefe come back into the team and things like that. You know, this is still a new partnership with himself and Leonard. And there was several times throughout the game, I think the communication between Minogue and Leonard wasn't the best, right? So I think there was at least one through ball in the first half where Minogue came out and claimed it. And there was, I think, daggers drawn between himself and Leonard, right? But there was a robust exchange of views, right, about who should be playing that ball. Just before halftime, there's Minogue comes out and absolutely poleaxes a Wexford player. Dead cert penalty, you know, it threw my hands in the air. And then it turned out that the linesman had given offside like seconds before Minogue had caused this collision, right? And a lucky man, I thought, you know, that was a real let off. But second half, he blots his copybook as well, right? Those are three occasions where we easily again could have coughed up like a whole number of goals under virtually no pressure. And so I think a bit of work to be done, right, to try and make those combinations a bit more robust. At least, you know, the team knows what they have to do. They can work on it in training and stuff like this, but I think we could do with that defense solidifying a little bit if we're going to continue winning the games.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you've both hit on the major talking points of the game. And just to go through the major events again, like you said, an early goal, 95 seconds, and we're off the mark. Horgan, Kenny combining Ruby there, doing the striker stuff that we haven't seen a lot of, being in exactly the right place at the right time to get a rebound and finish it, giving us a great platform. And what was noticeable was, we saw before the game, we had ex-Dundalk player Robbie McCourt in the lineup of the Wexford defence. In that opening 20 minutes, I have to say, I thought the Wexford fence looked absolutely there for the taking. In that, there seemed to be a real lack of urgency in their back line in competing for the balls and getting them and getting them clear, or basically, you know, getting a hold of the possession that we were having in their final third. It seemed that, you know, Dundalk more or less had the freedom of the Wexford box. We were able to kind of put balls in. Our players were able to get in possession with them. We were able to maintain that possession. They might, like the typical kind of move was Dundalk might get the ball in the box and it'd be half cleared and be recycled by Dundalk and straight back in. So I think Wexford in the opening stages, their defence seemed so lethargic. I think I actually said to you, I thought this was one of the weakest looking defences I've seen in Oriel Park in years. I thought they were absolutely there for the taking. So it wasn't really a great surprise when we got the second goal. Again, if you look at the way that that kind of goal comes about, Dundalk have a lot of opportunities to recycle the ball. It goes into the box, comes out of the box, and we end up sending it back in often enough for it to break our way. And Arubi has this really kind of crisp finish. But Wexford at that point, when we just on the half hour mark when we go 2-0 up, I thought, well, you know, this could be a 3 or 4-0. Now, you make a good point. What's disappointing about a lot of our goals this season is how little work the opposition have to do to earn those goals. If we think back to the Treaty game, which were the first points that we dropped, goalkeeping error in the closing stages of the game gives them, you know, a foothold and then an injury time equaliser, and suddenly we've dropped 2 points and we've taken a bit of a morale dip as well because of that. And we repeated that dose down there in Limerick as well. So it seems to be a bit of a pattern. Now, when we look at the arrival of the Wexford goal, it's two ex-Dundalk players. It's Robbie McCourt. And kind of we know Robbie McCourt's strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, his period in Dundalk was probably not one of the best in his career. But he gets possession from his fellow centre-half, Dean Larkin. He's about 25, 30 yards from his own goal. And he puts a ball slightly diagonally, but basically straight down the pitch. Now, that should never be a threat on the Dundalk goal. It's a centre-half passing from a centre-half position directly into our box. And yet somehow Minogue manages to just, I don't know, get distracted by the in-running forward. He's kind of looking for the player when he should be looking for the ball. And in that split second, when it's crucial that his handling is good, suddenly the ball squirms to him and emerges just in the path of the onrushing striker. Yeah, I don't want to single Minogue out. Like you say, you know, Peter Cherry is a very experienced keeper, and when he was thrown back into the team, he had a few slip-ups. It's the nature of being a goalkeeper. You know, even the best of them, like even Gary Rogers, had one or two mistakes. Minogue, generally speaking, is certainly more error-free than a lot of the keepers we've had in recent seasons. So we've had a really bad run of choosing the wrong keeper in recent years. So I think, generally speaking, he's solid. But that sort of mistake, you see how it quickly turns a situation where the team are very comfortable into one where we end up hanging on. Now, although the highlights didn't show this, I mean, the second goal arrives, and it's a sort of typical goal that we've been conceding. The ball bobbles about. Our defence began to look a little bit like the Wexford defence. We were giving Wexford far too much opportunity to recycle the ball into the box. Dean Larkin gets a header in the direction of goal. I think Mikey Rowe is just the first one to react to it, gets a foot to it, tucks it into the corner. And suddenly you're hanging on. You know, that great Keith Ward strike, when we thought it was like a bit of an insurance, turns out to be the winning margin. But what wasn't shown in the highlights is in the final dying moments of injury time, there is a free kick. It goes into the box again. It isn't defended. A Wexford header goes about a foot wide off the post. Now, if that goes the other way and you've dropped 2 points, you know, that's the type of error that could really drag you back from winning the league quite comfortably into the lottery of the playoffs. And we don't want that. So as you said, it's that kind of lack of work that other players have to do, which is perhaps concerning. And I suppose the mitigating factors might be this is a relatively new look back four. Leonard and O'Keefe, you mentioned Minogue and O'Keefe, might be sort of on a different wavelength at the minute. Leonard and O'Keefe are also getting to know each other a little bit. And at points, we perhaps should have been more dominant. Now, there's things we can look at. Maioa is apparently not too far away from a return with that hamstring injury, which gives us the option of having that established or more familiar centre-half pairing of Leonard and Maioa in the middle. Gives us the option of O'Keefe at right back, even though Gerald Wilson has been performing decently there as well. So again, I suppose we asked the question, I mean, is this just in the character of Dundalk? Are we going to be conceding those type of goals this season? Or is this something that you feel can be addressed on the training ground to give us a little bit of a more comfortable run in?
I would say it can be addressed. I think we've seen enough from that defence, as you naming all those names. I mean, this season we've been impressed by all of them. So I think it is something fixable. I don't think it's a situation that we simply don't have the talent, because I think all those players have really impressed us. I think it's a case of, again, players out of position and injury forcing kind of partnerships which aren't tested. So I'd be fairly confident with that. You know, Dundalk for a while, our problem was that our defence was pretty solid. We just simply could not score. Then we start scoring and the defence has issues. So, and again, I think we'll talk about that. But I think, again, that one good thing is that the midfield is this consistent thing, which has been helping us. But I would say it's definitely fixable, because we've seen enough from those players to know that that they have the talent to... individual talent. So I think it's maybe just, you know, working them together with a system. So I'd say that is definitely fixable. I would say, you know, Killer would be well, you know, aware of the situation and the issues. And I think they can work on it. But I think, and, you know, Dundalk is kind of, you know, in this fine line this season where kind of you could be an injury two away from proper crisis. So, and we have been had to lean on very young players at times and stuff like this. So it does kind of show you the limitations of the squad, which are obvious. You know, we were a club on the brink of absolute annihilation, and it's a project about, you know, just about get us back up with a kind of a duct tape together club in a way. So I would say we can ride it out. Injuries would be your biggest worry, especially as you come to the last and third of the season, where a few more injuries. And I mean, someone like a Spate has been really impressive when he's come on, but it's too much, I think, to put on a 16-year-old or 17-year-old's shoulders to help drag a club into the Premier Division. So I think they can do it. I just think injuries would be a worry. Players leaving, you know, the vultures are starting to circle on the squad. We always said that was the problem. Our players do really well, and then they get on the radar of other clubs. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I think they can sort it out. The good thing is, though, is that now our attack is working again. Maybe they can shift focus to the defence and try and fix that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also partly just about getting a settled lineup. So there's so much chopping and changing in the back line at the moment. I mean, we had Mikhail and Leonard last week, and then Mikhail goes off injured, and then Kyo goes off injured, and now all of a sudden the back four is featuring like Shane Tracy, right, as of the other night, another novel introduction to that defence. And you get the feeling that, like, it's unsurprising that there are some problems right there. So I think some time in the training ground, right, trying to get those partnerships right, trying to get the communication right and things like that, I think we could easily sort this out. But, you know, it's not that long since we watched Bray at Oriel Park, right, and Cantwell scoring with a sort of unmarked header, you know, sort of 6 yards out and stuff like this. You know, it just feels like that sort of stuff, the basics are not really, I think the defence is not really on top of them right now. And so, like I say, work to be done, but very confident that it can get done.
Yeah, speaking of victims of our own success, there's been a couple of players and they've been particularly outstanding. Sean Kyo has been one of them. Looked very comfortable when we were in the Premier Division. A player who never really, you know, was an issue. His position was always very much consistent performances and lockdown at a higher level. So most fans would have had him earmarked if we could have kept him as a player who would be comfortable should we go up. We could perhaps expand that question out to how many other players in the current squad fall into that category. But he'll be departing, apparently for a record fee on his way to Brighton. It's not really a major surprise. I imagine if most folks were asked what Dundalk FC player is most likely to make a big move next, most people probably would have said him. So it's been a position that we haven't really had to worry about. Obviously, a solution will have to be found. But I suppose if you could just give us a kind of opinion on how you think Sean has done, how you think he might fare when he gets over to England, how we might replace him. And also on that question of players who could play at a higher level, I suppose Dundalk is going to either do two things. We'll either go up or we won't. If we don't go up, we've got one set of problems. If we do go up, we've got another set of problems. And one of those will be the moment, the second that we secure Premier Division status, the first thing that Kieran Kilduff will have to ask himself. And it's a question that probably fans, it's on their mind, but perhaps they haven't really spoken about it publicly. The first thing that he's going to have to say is, all right, how many of the guys who've just won me the First Division can cut it in the Premier Division? Now, Sean Kyo certainly would have been one of those players. At this moment in time, and we know there is, you know, over, there's 12 games left to nail down your contract for next year if you're Dundalk FC players. As of this moment in time, how many of the current squad do you think would make that cut?
I mean, I think there are some players that, because of their age profile, have a lot of scope for improvement. You know, you would say that they haven't or are not even near their peak at the moment, and a lot of potential to go on before they hit that peak. So, I mean, I suppose Sean Kyo would have been the first one on everybody's lips, right, before the announcement of his move. But, you know, Vinnie Leonard as well, maybe even Harry Groom, right, that I think Kieran Godlove himself has talked a lot about saying, you know, he's only 22, you know, sort of week to week, you can see the improvements in his game and stuff like that. You know, probably there is scope for him to improve further. And I think there's even younger players in the squad, like Andy Parashev and, you know, people like that, who haven't maybe even nailed down a place in the first team on a regular basis. But you would say that, you know, if the trajectory, you know, continues to improve and stuff like that, you know, within another 2-3 years might be one of those, you know, really quality players, I think, to have in the Premier Division. There's others, right, that I think are on loan and stuff like that. So like Sean McHale and stuff like that has impressed me at least, but he's going to go back to Pats, presumably. I'm not sure how long is left on his contract there and things like that, but I think the expectation, right, is that we'll lose him at the end of the year, no matter what happens. And so I think the other person that sticks out to me is A. Dervin, right? So Dervin, I think, has been absolutely magnificent over the past few weeks. Right, if you could clone him, and I'm not saying have 11 A. Dervins necessarily, but at least his psyche, the work effort that he's putting in, like the example that he's setting to other people in, you know, how to approach the game and stuff like that, is absolutely fantastic. Right, I think purely on dressing room character or, you know, something like that, I think you would keep him in the squad. The only thing is that I think in the Premier Division last year, his, you know, lack of pace and I suppose I don't want to say like physicality, because he's definitely got physicality, but you know, other people in that position in the Premier Division have the kind of telescopic legs where, you know, they can sort of stick out a leg and win a ball and stuff of that. That is just something that he hasn't got. And I think maybe last year I wasn't convinced that he was a Premier Division player, but what I've seen this year, right, of him playing in the First Division, like he looks head and shoulders above everybody else. I think he's definitely worth another shot.
Yeah. That was going to be my first answer to that question is A. Dervin, almost in a talismanic way. He's like the beating heart of the team. So I would say, obviously, we can talk about, you know, I mean, there's talent throughout the squad. But even the last few weeks in defeats and everything, A. Dervin covers every blade of grass. He runs himself into the ground each week. He doesn't give up anything. He is actually, in a way, something that Dundalk has been missing for a while. In that we've always, you know, the whole, now I'm not going to compare extreme legends to current players and stuff, yes, but I'm talking about in a vibes sense. We've never really replaced Chris Shields or a Skip in that hardened, battling, run yourself into the ground, screams at other players, lifts the team type player. A. Dervin is turning into that. So I would say absolutely he would be my first name to retain and keep going with, because I think he definitely is the heartbeat of the team. And then, as Martin said, you know, Leonard, Groom, players like that. I think one of the ways I would answer your question, Ken, is you can play fantasy football and saying who would you keep, but if Dundalk go up, it's going to be it's going to have to be like a realistic prospect. We all know that we're going to be entering in with an extremely diminished budget compared to our rivals, so we're going to have to be clever. We were saying that the Sligo game would be a kind of test of this team. We were looking at it, was very interesting to see the test of this team against a Premier Division club. Now, you could say we failed the test, but there was a lot to take away from that game. Bizarrely, the comments after the Sligo game were more positive than the Kerry game. So there was a lot to admire there in the way the team conducted themselves in the face of, okay, a team second from bottom in the Premier Division. But there was something to be seen there that they weren't fazed by the occasion. Obviously, I mean, the result is the result, so let's not gloss it too much. But I think that apart from players that get picked off and taken from us, which is going to be a big threat, your question is who would we keep? I mean, I think we're going to have to probably keep as much of this team as we can. Because I'm not sure we're going to have much scope to, you know, go into the transfer market. But the positive thing is that I think we're top of the division. We're 6 points clear, so we're doing something right. We're top of a bad division. I hate, you know, to be super negative here, but I think, you know, we are the best team in a not great field. But yeah, no, like Groom, Leonard, players like that, absolutely. Animasoon, Dervin. I think there's the guts of a team that can battle, and you know what I mean? The big question is then, is someone like Owen Kenny, for instance, can he step up? And we're beginning to see an improvement, I think, in Kenny as the season's going on. I think he's contributing more. He's getting in more with assists. He's doing a lot of the work of running around and, you know, not necessarily, you know, putting the ball in the net himself, but becoming more of a nuisance. That's more of, I think, your interesting question. I think some players like a Leonard or Groom are like, yep, you'll keep going with them. The other question is, which players do you think have slightly underperformed in, you know, literally goals, players you're expecting goals from? Can they make a step up? But I think a lot of this is going to be dictated to us by funds or lack thereof.
You gentlemen have been very diplomatic and, dare I say, nice in your assessment. So let me just give you a counterpoint. Cork City won the first division last season by 22 points, and that includes a complete drop-off in form once they actually secured the promotion. They won one of their last five games, still managed to be 22 points ahead of their nearest rival. So that's a substantial margin. And where are they now? Rooted to the bottom of the Premier Division and looking dead certs for relegation. So I think the gap between the top of the First Division and the bottom of the Premier is not just one position. I think they're nearly different worlds. And if you do go up, judging from the Cork example, you really need a revolution in the squad to give yourself a fighting chance. And that's not to be down on our own players. Everything you said, you know, I wouldn't dismiss. There are players that show promise. There are players that show youthful potential and all of that. But it's proving to be a very, very, very unforgiving division for Cork City. And it would be prudent to think that that's going to be exactly the same for us. So I would have had Kyo and Leonard as definite dead certs to be Premier Division players. I mean, Leonard looks like something of a prodigy. Still incredibly only 17 years of age. Hopefully we'll have him for a while. There was an interview between Kieran Kilduff and Jerry Malone where they discussed the Sean Kyo transfer, and Jerry Malone alluded to rumours surrounding Leonard as well. I don't know if they'll happen this year, but I'd be pretty convinced that Vinnie Leonard is going to have a professional career at a higher standard than the Premier Division in the League of Ireland within the next few years. So that means that, like, while you've been kind of hopeful in saying that, I guess, Harry Groom does have, you know, aspects to his game that could cut it at the Premier Division level, Aidan Dervin works tirelessly and expends every ounce of energy that he has. The reality of the table would indicate that that's not enough. And we are probably going to have to, if we're going to have a prospect of survival, not to get too far ahead of ourselves because we have to get promoted first, we're probably going to have to substantially reinforce and improve that squad, which will, of course, mean you'll need the resources to do that. And whether or not we have those resources is a bigger question. Now, on the question of, like, this gulf that I imagine between the Premier League and the First Division, another gulf was discussed in that interview, and it came up in some of the tweets that were sent to us as well. The UCD fans' Twitter account said, First Division opposition are closer to Dundalk than some presume. Kieran Kilduff also said, there isn't really a big gulf between ourselves and many of our opponents. Am I deluded in thinking that we should be beating these teams handsomely week in, week out, and when we concede a few goals against them, that there's, you know, something wrong with that? Or are we, in fact, you know, in the same neighbourhood as regards quality as the Brays and the Coves and even the Wexfords?
I mean, I would agree with, you know, that to some degree, at least, in that, you know, we have talked about how this squad and this club has been duct taped together, right, in order to, you know, sort of get out on the field and actually play games in the first place. And so it's no surprise to me that I think we are relatively close to the likes of UCD and Wexford and Cove and various other people. I think what's been impressive about the Dundalk side so far this season is their consistency, right? So I think there have been plenty of times this season where the Dundalk squad have been asked a question, right? Are you actually good enough? And every single time they have responded and said just about yes. So I think we have, you know, lamented the fact that we haven't, you know, put it all together right in a single game and gone out and battered somebody, you know. But I think in terms of the consistency of performance and stuff like that and getting over the line, we have consistently done enough. And I think that's probably the most commendable thing about the squad, right? The biggest compliment we can say is that, you know, their consistency has been really, really good. And nobody else has really shown that. And, you know, there have been times where we had that match against Cove, right? They could have gone top of the table or joined top, right, by beating us. And we managed to beat them instead, right, and pull out a gap. And so, you know, I think that's the thing that gives me greatest comfort at the moment. Are we going to go to UCD on Friday, you know, and put four or five goals on them? Nope, I don't think so. I actually looked at the stats, right? I think ourselves and themselves have the meanest defences in the division so far this season. I would be very surprised if this game wasn't settled by a single goal. And so, like, that's my expectation for Friday night. If we can be on the winning side and if we can do the same against Longford on Monday, like I say, I think that is, you know, 100% job done. If we can do that. But, you know, I sort of agree with the sentiment. I don't think there was a whole lot between the Dundalk squad and the other squads. But I think in terms of consistency and just pumping it out every week, like, we are top of the pile for a reason.
Yeah. I don't know, like, what the context is of, like, the UCD fan account saying something like that. But I would say a few things. I would say I don't think Dundalk are arrogant. And I don't think Dundalk fans are arrogant. In fact, each week as we read out the comments, even after wins, we're slating our own team. We haven't been the most positive podcast in the world for a team which is top of the division. So there's definitely not a swagger around the club. There's a kind of a, you know, it's, you know, we're kind of proud of the players. And I think the players are putting in, I mean, you know, the players aren't slacking. The players are giving it their all. Big difference from Dundalk of a few years ago where, you know, there were shouts of stealing a living when they were being paid. You know what I mean? Like, there was lots of questions over players and their commitment. You wouldn't say about any of these players, but I don't think there's cocky or arrogance about Dundalk FC or their fans. We're just about doing enough. But the other thing I would say is the league table doesn't lie, okay? We're 6 points clear, which tells you that we're definitely the best in the division, but we're not, like, as you said, Cork. We're not nuking them from orbit. So I think the table is giving you a pretty, you know, fair tale of the tape. And we're 16 points ahead of UCD, which, again, is not to be cocky or anything like that, but it's a kind of a thing of, we're talking about gulfs. We're 6 points clear of Cove, but we're 16 points clear of fourth place. So we're doing something right. Are we Galactico's world beaters? No. But we're 12 games to go, 6 points clear. It should be higher, I would say. And then again, this is not cockiness. This is detrimental to Dundalk FC. I think every fan knows this. We watch the games each week. Bunch of those games, which were draws and losses, could have been wins. We should be with our nose ahead. We had a bigger gap at one stage. We have let it slip. We've wobbled a little bit. But I think 6 points clear is a fair, you know, tail of the tape. Our performances against someone like Cove, you know, as Martin said, when we've needed to, when we've dipped, we usually respond well the next game and just about did enough to keep our nose ahead. So I think it's, you know, we are top of the table for a reason, but we're not blasting the league away. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about us. And I think Dundalk fans know, because we watch the games. I don't know, maybe other people looking at the division or looking down, you know, people from up above looking down and saying, oh, how are Dundalk getting on? Might think, oh, they must be running away with it, but we're not. But we're 6 points clear, and that's a fair position.
Yeah, just to return to the other comments that we got on Twitter, Lee Collins came in to say Dundalk had energy enough in the first half and the second half, and that was Premier Division class. It dropped somewhat in the last 25 minutes, maybe because of Wardy's goal. It's 3-1 and you're cruising. We need to maintain that energy for the full 90 minutes. Ruby is an incredible talent, full stop. And easily man of the match and was a real handful. And I suppose we kind of haven't maybe discussed enough those clinical finishes that he had. Killer of the Oriel Moon said, well, we asked for goals, good performance overall. You can caveat those defensive errors due to a makeshift back four. Ruby is maturing with each game. A real diamond killer has emerged. Onwards to a big weekend, and indeed it will be. Robbie says, we should have been out of sight. Can't legislate for those errors. Defence generally was good and we managed it well at the end. Some cracking goals. And Simon Canning says, not a pretty win despite two wonder goals, but it's 3 points. And in a night where Cove dropped two, it's not a bad night at the office. Not sure what lessons we need to learn. It will be interesting to see how Orvie does, Rowan Vaughan. Looks very strong and up for the fight. Hopefully he'll score a few. So just to kind of turn our attention to the strike force of the team, Arubi, very, very good night for him. And also we saw a cameo performance from Rowan Vaughan, who certainly left an impression on the Wexford keeper and the referee. I think he managed to get a yellow card for that too. What did you make of Arubi's progression and Vaughan's cameo?
Well, I think Arubi's performances are speaking for themselves. He has stepped up a few times now this season when Dundalk have needed goals. He has been the person to, you know, break that deadlock. And what I think would be, he absolutely was man of the match the other night. And I think two things. Again, I keep going about Evan, the second goal, lovely goal, great to see those goals. Crowd loved it. But I think still think the first goal was the most important thing. The fact that someone in Dundalk scored a scrappy, ugly front of goal, front of the next goal. And he was in the right position, right time. Another thing I'd say about Dundalk recently is players being not in the right position. We've bemoaned a lot of times the ball going into the net and there's no going into the box and there's no one there, or the right pass and just not the right person on the end of it. So I think Arubi has earned his spot, by the way, to be one of the first, him and Dervin, first names on the, you know, on the team sheet. I think Arubi should be starting every game now. I think that's, you know, it'd be I think insanity at this point not to. And then you have things like Kenny providing assists this week, Dean Ebe providing the assist last week. So I think that attacking machine is getting, you know, into motion. Players not scoring but providing assists, which is as vital as goals. And then, yeah, Vaughan was very interesting. I think he wanted to make an impression. He was full of energy. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see. I don't think it's enough to tell really about what he's going to contribute. But I think he definitely looked up for it, which is great to see. And definitely left an impression. And maybe he really, you know, he wants to set out his stall soon. And that's great, that kind of competition. And a player who really, really wants to let the manager and the fans know that it means business is good for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think really interesting to talk about Arubi's hold-up play, which I think was very good and a feature of his game that has really improved right over the last 6 months or so. So I think, you know, we were all big fans of Dean Ebbie's hold-up play that, you know, he tended to bring people much more into the game, a bit like Patrick Hooban, like, you know, occupy a couple of defenders and yet make room for other people in the field. I think Arubi might have struggled with that earlier in the season, but you can see that, you know, sort of growing into his game now, that he is doing a lot better job holding up the ball. And I think he did a great job of bringing people like Daryl Horgan into play and, you know, stuff like this. And there were many more chances right in that first 20 minutes where we probably should have been further ahead that I think were really caused by him, you know, wrestling with defenders and, like I say, occupying them a lot. From that perspective, it's going to be a bit of difference, right, to see Rowan Vaughan, who I think, you know, Arubi looks like a tall but quite slight figure, and Rowan Vaughan on the other hand looks like somebody who will definitely, you know, muscle defenders around and stuff like that. It was slightly different, you know, the way that he was deployed, I think, late in the game when the game was very, you know, sort of fragmented and disjointed, and I think we were looking really to take the ball into the corner as much as possible and try and kill some time. I think it'll be interesting to see how much he occupies a pair of defenders, right, holding up the ball, because he certainly looks physically capable of it. Has he got the same ability to, like, bring other people into play and score goals? I think we'll have to wait and see. I would also wrap up by just saying a great night's entertainment at Oriel. Like, we called over the last few weeks for some goals because, you know, that seemed to be a real problem for the team. We definitely got goals. There was five of them. It might not have been, you know, all one-way traffic or, you know, the comfortable victory that, you know, we all hope to see, but it was certainly entertaining. You know, you left after full time and you couldn't help but say that that was you know, money well spent if you were down at Oriel on Friday.
And two great goals as well, and Keith Ward as well with one to remember as well. So exactly, I said, you know, we wanted goals. It was, I suppose, a thrilling game, not in the way we wanted, but also a great quality of goal, which is something, especially attendances are dipping. If something's maybe, and maybe you put it down to a midsummer lull or whatever, but if things are going to get people back to Oriel, winning games, but also, like, I was talking to a few people on Saturday who had seen the Ward goal, for instance, and they were like, oh, yeah, that was a great goal. So I think scoring good goals, nice little, you know, clip goals that go around, that get sent around, will remind people that there's, you know, it is nice football being played. I mean, what we've liked about this team is that I agree with Martin, which is winning every game ugly is all I would care about. But, you know, they've also, you know, they're trying progressive play as well and some good goals. So, yeah, it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I suppose despite those errors, I mean, we do have to be realistic when you put it, as you've put it, in the context of a club that was on the verge of extinction. I mean, we all should be pretty happy with where we are. But of course, being Dundalk fans, we're never entirely satisfied. There is always room for improvement. But on current form, the fact that we've been in this position now for basically the whole season, and you're looking at the fixtures we've got, next weekend is really pivotal with those two games. Winnable games, you know, UCD, yeah, can be a stubborn nut to crack, but again, a team that we should have nothing to fear about. And then again, we're going to be having our Midlands double bill with the visits of Longford and Athlone. Again, the Athlone game away, something of a kind of a few question marks over that performance, but you look at the kind of lineup of games that we've got coming up and they're winnable, and now they're beginning to count down. And basically, if we don't have some sort of Kevin Keegan style Newcastle collapse from a commanding position, we should be okay here. So I suppose there's lots of reasons to be optimistic that we might achieve the mission of the year, which is to get ourselves out of this division and back to the big time, and to all the challenges and opportunities that that will bring. So I suppose on that note, we'll probably wrap it up there for this episode. Thank you, Martin Mullen and Rory Murphy, for joining me for the chat. Thanks everybody messaging on Twitter. And we'll be back to talk to you again after next weekend's games.